Thank you, Sir President. Sir President, over to you. That's your message, sir.
Okay. Welcome, honorable members.
Chair, you are on mute, Chair. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Thanks very much. Welcome, honorable members, Minister, Deputy Minister, DG. There's too much noise in the background. Can we make sure that all the time, unless if we are speaking, we mute our videos and our microphones?
Yeah.
Okay. You are welcome, honorable members of the four committees on appropriations and finance. Welcome the Minister of Finance, the Deputy Minister, the DG, officials from Treasury. Welcome the Commissioner of Staff, the PBO, all other entities that might be present in the meeting. Hey, mute. Who's muting me? Hey, Luawalu and Alan, what's happening today?
It's you, Chair. You don't want to share this meeting. Don't mute yourself, Chair.
It's you. You are, don't bewitch my system from Eastern Cape.
Witchcraft,
for Eastern Cape.
That is Jewish.
Okay. Today's briefing is from the Minister on the 2020 MTBPS. The meeting is officially open. All are welcome. Apologies. Honorable Buthelezi might join us a bit later. He was flying from town to Johannesburg. I see the other Buthelezi. Is there the impost who's on the platform? Okay. Other apologies, secretaries.
Chair, it's Alan. From the Standing Committee on Finance, the only apology is from Mr. Hill Lewis, and that's it.
I'm Chair from Select Committee on Finance. We do not have any apology. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson. From Standing Committee on Appropriations, we have three apologies from Mr. Matafa, Ms. Dikhale, and Mr. Shekima. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Afternoon, Chair. From the Select Committee on Appropriations, we have two apologies, Chairperson, Mr. Molezane and the Honourable Mama Rakhane, Chair. Chairperson, I forgot to brief you before we start the meeting. We also invited provinces, so there are some chairpersons who have already joined, but I have two apologies from the Chairperson of the PC on Finance from Mpumalanga and Western Cape Chairperson. I saw Honorable Mbese is on the already, so others, they will join during the course of the meeting.
Oh, okay. Welcome, Chairpersons of the Finance Committees in the Provincial Legislatures. You are all welcome.
Yes,
Comrade Joe. And then we are done with apologies. Minister.
Can I just come in for 1 second?
Oh, Comrade Yunis.
Yeah, just very quickly, I think you might know, and I informed you that we have a provincial week, which was set a long time ago, so we couldn't change it when the MTBPS date changed. So some members have indicated from the finance side, which is also the appropriation side, they may have to leave at 2 o'clock because they're linking up with their provincial visits virtually. Myself also, I'm going to link up with Utugela District Municipality. So I might slip out at about 2:15 or so. I'll stay for a little bit around that time, possibly longer if I can. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks very much, Comrade Karim.
That apology will include me, Chair.
Comrade Digelet.
Rulas Dulo. Get apology, Honorable Nkosi Karim. This I am Ndlama, ka Provincial Week. I'm at Kovanimbeki.
Okay.
So, yeah.
No problem.
I'm equally going to say that because my apology has not been read as yet. My office have sent the apology to the office there. We're joining the NCOP in the visiting of the railway lines in Gauteng as part of the NCOP week. So I'll be leaving at about 1:30. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. We'll try to move faster so that maybe by the time we finish the meeting, all of us will still be in the platform. Let me right away invite the minister to come on item 3 to brief the joint committees on 2020 MTBBS. Minister, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. And given the fact that a number of colleagues who leave early, maybe I should just cut to the chase. We have a choreography here, which will be the DG and the other relevant senior officials, but I'll ask them to be very brief. Just go to the key issues that we're dealing with. I'll say a few words and then I'll hand over to DG. But I thought, Chair, to ask you, if I may, for us to observe a very short moment of silence in remembrance of Mr. Daniel Plachis, who was the chair of the FFC that you interacted quite significantly with. He has since passed away, as you might be aware. So if I could request that maybe you allow the committee to have a moment of silence in remembrance of, if that's okay with you.
No, no, okay. Can we observe a moment of silence, comrades and colleagues? May the soul of Professor Daniel Plachis rest in eternal peace.
Amen.
Thank you very much.
Amen. Oh, that's shocking.
Yeah. It's shocking, yes. Honorable members, we are going to be very brief in our submission. All of you were in the house, either in person or via the technology system. Basically, we submitted the relevant documentation as usual. We then presented the medium-term fiscal strategy. But more importantly, and that's the important thing of all other things that we said, is the fiscal framework. That's the most important thing beyond the poetry and the biblical quotes and so on. It is that fiscal strategy that you recall, the framework rather. You recall that in June, we came to you with an active scenario in which we wanted to stabilize debt within 3 years. Subsequent debates and discussions in cabinet, in NEDLAC and so on, led to a situation where we eventually reached a consensus that we should have a 5-year scenario. But the 5-year scenario stabilizes debt at about 95% of GDP, debt to GDP ratio at 95%. So we think we're now in the danger zone, because any slippage that might happen will easily lead us towards the 100% mark, or even greater than 100%, which means the debt to GDP will be greater than, the debt will be greater than the GDP. So the numerator will be greater than the denominator. So, and that's a very important part of the story. The second issue is that the debt servicing costs are rising, which is something that we should be very careful and aware of, and be able to manage it. The other takeaway is that for us to fund the business rescue plan for SAA, we had to scramble around and take monies from different votes in order to have the 10.5 billion rand for the business rescue for SAA. The press statement that came out of DPE this morning is misleading South Africans. It's not correct. But be that as it may, the 10.5 billion had to be found, and we had to find it in different departments. Unfortunately, the larger burden of that fell on the police, I think, and education probably, but the colleagues will let us know. So the fiscal deficit still around the 15.7% thereabouts. Again, you'll see from the table on the fiscal fiscal framework. Basically, that's the story, really. Slower growth, contraction in GDP to about slightly greater than 7%. Slower tax collection. Now we estimate that tax revenue will decline by an additional 8.7 billion thereabout, to about 322 billion, but you'll see the exact figures. The debt to GDP ratio, as I say, because of the 5-year scenario, now rising to about 95% of GDP. Debt servicing costs being a major problem that we have to deal with, and the funding for SAA. So now, if we have got time, those who members will be remaining, I could discuss a little bit with you the crisis facing the water boards in South Africa. It's not part of the medium-term budget statement, but I think you need to know about it. Because very soon we're going to have major water issues in municipalities. But that's a separate matter I'd like to brief you about. On that basis, having said that, Chair, could I hand over to DG Dondo to carry on with our choreography, please? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ministers. Minister, good morning, Honourable Members of Parliament. Good morning, Chair, and good morning, other Chairs. Thank you very much, Minister. You took as part of our choreography, you took some of my points, but let me summarize what we're saying as follows. There are three points that we're essentially lifting in the budget that we presented yesterday. One is that this budget is about saving lives generally. So we are making some, we are providing resources and ensuring that through the adjustment budget process and finalizing that so that then it becomes processed in law, where we're providing a massive health responses. We are also increasing services, frontline services. Providing some relief to households and businesses. And obviously confirming that, and obviously confirming the amount that
the 350 rand grant by 3 months. So there's that set of issues around our interventions as a result of the pandemic. So we are going into detail in terms of what we said and some of the obvious things that you know. Secondly, which is again the pillar of what this budget is about, we are crystallizing the economic and recovery plan and actually saying what needs to happen, re-emphasizing the critical areas that we need to be doing in order to ensure that we have to make interventions. And in that way, we are confirming and actually thanking the social partners in business, labor, and civil society for having engaged us to actually finalize this plan. This plan is about boosting confidence and investment, about reforms that needs to be unlocked for sustained higher growth, about short-term interventions around electricity generation in digital spectrum, allocation, employment, and rapid industrialization, and also about the implementation of other reforms around modernizing network industries. We've been saying this, reducing barriers to entry, increasing regional and integration and trade. So broadly, there are areas around what this plan is all about and that we need to firm up. The final point number three around what this budget was saying yesterday, we want to confirm and ensure the stability of public finance through showing a five-year fiscal consolidation program, as the minister said, ensuring that the budget deficit is narrowed. As part of the fiscal consolidation, we're also lifting the issue about wages, with the wage bill in particular, and also talking about the tax environment, that clearly the tax continues to disappoint in terms of what you're able to collect. And we are in this saying that as part of the fiscal challenges and issues, we are saying the revenue collection is down by almost 300%. And our ability and a capability to ensure that we service our debt is an issue that we're lifting, because we are saying here that we don't want to find ourselves in a situation where we are not able to pay and we get in a situation where we default on debt. So yeah, those three areas are essentially a summary of what we are saying. And when we say that in many words, we say that in more detail in terms of the interventions that we need to be making in various sectors. Minister and Chair, I will leave it at that and ask Edgar quickly, and as Minister said, the presentation was made in Parliament yesterday, to quickly just go through some of the key salient slides that will actually have to bring the point that Minister and I have raised, Edgar, and leave them for the committees to pick up these issues that are critical for this medium-term budget policy statement. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Minister. Honourable Chairman and members of the committee, I'll cover quickly the macro-fiscal outlook, and then my colleague at the end, Tapiso Mashole, will cover the borrowing and financing. We can move on to the next slide, because this has been covered by, the overview has been covered by Minister and DG. Thank you. So South Africa, as members will be aware, entered the current crisis already in a weak macroeconomic position. As you can see at the bottom of this table, South Africa's economic growth performance for the last couple of years was fairly weak, and the crisis, of course, hit, and that caused a massive contraction. The global economy, of course, is going through a contraction, projected at 4.4% this year, but a significant recovery is projected next year, with global growth projected at 5.2%. Emerging market and developing countries will be the main drivers of this growth, with countries such as China and India growing above 8% projected next year. For sub-Saharan Africa, growth will be just over 3%. In South Africa this year, we are now projecting, having projected a contraction of 7.2% in June, we are now projecting a contraction of 7.8%. But with strong base effects, we are projecting that will rebound into a growth of 3.3% in 2021. Next slide. in the next slide, slide number three, it just outlines the domestic outlook. In particular, we provide a breakdown of the macroeconomic projections. What I would call your attention to in this regard is firstly, in the highlighted section of the table that you see in front of you, the size of South Africa's economy, we often talk about growth rates, but the size of South Africa's economy, as you can see in 2019, at current prices, our economy was just over 5 trillion rands. This year, we project the economy will shrink to just over 4.8 trillion rand, as you can see in the highlighted section, before recovering again over the medium term. We consider that inflation will remain very anchored along the midpoint of the target band of 3 to 6% over the medium term. We're still projecting that investment levels will have some weakness next year, but will be much stronger than it is this year as the economy recovers and, of course, as restrictions on economic activity continue to produce positive results. Nevertheless, there are significant downside risks to these forecasts. In the main, a second wave of the COVID-19 infections, and should we have another set of lockdowns, we're seeing lockdowns being reinstated in several parts of Europe. Should we have another lockdown, that would of course have a very substantial negative impact on the economy. At this point, we're not projecting that, but should that happen, that would of course place significant downside pressure on economic activity. Next slide. This slide number four, this next slide, I'm not going to spend time on it because members will be aware of the fiscal relief package and its shape because it was passed by Parliament. So this information should very much be in the ambit of members, so I won't go through it. I would go to the next slide, and slide number five, which reflects on the economic recovery plan. Both the minister and the DG also touched on this. I would say just two things here. The first is around the fact that we consider that economic reforms are a key part of addressing both our overall economic challenges of low growth, low economic activity, and low long-run economic output, including as it pertains to the job market. We also want to indicate the fact that, as Minister outlined in some detail yesterday, the operation of Vulindlela is being operationalized as part of government's effort to make sure that implementation of the recovery plan actually happens. Next slide, slide number six. Here we reflect on the revised revenue projections for the current year. Members will recall that we were projecting revenue shortfall of 304 billion rands in the current year. We're projecting that the revenue shortfall will be 312.8 billion rands in the current financial year. But there will be a recovery next year, but we will still have some weakness compared to budget 2020. But as you can see in 2021, in the second column, and in 2022-23 and 2023-24, we are projecting the estimates that you see there from 1.1 trillion this year, rising to 1.5 trillion, or around 25% of GDP over the medium term. Thank you. Next slide. In this slide, slide number seven, we reflect part of what the minister was referring to around our the risks pertaining to our debt trajectory. But we also wanted to give to indicate to the committees on the left-hand side, we show over the last decade, really graphically, the story that we've been telling for some time, which is that South Africa has been on a very expansionary fiscal trajectory for about a decade. And we sit somewhere in the middle in terms of our expansionary picture. So the primary balance, which has been in deficit for some time, shows that South Africa has had quite an expansionary fiscal stance for some time. So the narrative around austerity does not hold true in the numbers. The numbers actually show that South Africa has been expansionary for some time. And the result of that is shown in the right-hand side graph, which shows that our projected three-year increase in debt, the debt levels of government, are certainly very high compared to our peers in emerging markets as well as other developing countries. And so our fiscal distress situation is quite significant. We are seeing fiscal distress mounting across the developing world. In our case, we are in particular losing ground and need to take measures to arrest what is an unsustainable buildup of public debt. Next slide. In the same vein, in this slide number 8, we indicate the growing risks over the last number of years, particularly the last half decade, where cash payments consuming and crowding out, consuming more of public resources and crowding out an increasing amount of government spending. Debt service costs are now just under 5% the size of the economy, an increase from 3.3% in 2016-2017. It's also important to understand that we need to, as part of addressing this challenge, to start addressing the decline in infrastructure investment by the state. And so in that regard, stabilizing the fiscus requires both the fiscal consolidation overall, but also a shift in the composition of expenditure. Next slide. In slide number 9, our steps to reduce the significant fiscal imbalance that we've been living with and stabilize the debt to GDP ratio over 5 years are outlined. What we are proposing is that compared or relative to the 2020 budget, main budget non-interest expenditure should be reduced by 60 billion rand next year, 90 billion the following year, and 150 billion the year thereafter, and then maintain some constraints on the spending growth in the following 2 years. The largest of these reductions would fall on compensation, and then we would allow, or rather we would push for a growth in capital spending and a protection and infrastructure grant. In addition to the spending reductions, we propose tax increases of 5 billion next year, 10 billion the following year, and 10 billion thereafter, as well as 15 billion beyond the MTF. This will allow us to achieve a primary budget surplus by 2025-26, and this is expected to result in debt stabilizing at 95.3% in the same year. Next slide. This slide, slide number 10, shows on the left-hand side how we are closing that fiscal gap gradually over the MTF, and on the right-hand side, it shows how, having spiked in the current year, we begin to reduce the primary deficit over the MTF. Next slide, slide number 11. In slide number 11, then, we show the debt outlook, the gross loan debt of government. As you can see in the dotted line, firstly, we are projecting this record amount of debt of 81%
or just under 4 trillion rand, 1.8% GDP or just under 4 trillion rand. This will rise to 95.3% of GDP in 2025-26, and then we begin to bring it down again. And so that is the stabilization point for public debt. Next slide. The fiscal framework that achieves this outcome is shown here in this in the slide that members will be familiar with from the MTBPS document, so I won't spend time on it. And as the minister indicated, the consolidated deficit will narrow from 15.7% this year down to 7.3% in the outer year. Next slide. Slide 13 shows that our fiscal consolidation approach is one that is meant to be target consumption spending in our spending reduction and shifting towards investment spending. And so if you look at this bar chart, you can see that payments for capital assets are growing faster than the other items at 7.8% over the MTF. Next slide. Slide number 14 shows reflects on the proposal for reductions in the consumption spending of government weighted towards the public sector wage bill as reflected in the MTBPS document, in particular really a guideline that implies a wage freeze for the next 3 years. Next slide. This slide 15 is a reproduction of a slide in the MTBPS that you'll be familiar with, so I won't spend time on it. Next slide, slide 16. Slide 16 tells two stories and emphasizes the risks we're facing because debt service costs are now the fastest growing item, have been for a while, but continue to be the fastest growing item of expenditure. Nevertheless, it is true that because we are shifting the composition of expenditure towards infrastructure, economic development and community development are growing at a faster rate item in the budget as part of our efforts to support the economic recovery plan. Next slide, slide 17. This is the division of revenue shown in chapter 4 of the MTBPS, so I won't spend any time on it, except to just say that the division of revenue in percentage shares remains broadly the same as what we've had in the past, except that there is a marginal increase in the shares of provinces and local government. Minister, with your permission, I will hand over to Sathis, basically has to an end by talking to the financing and debt management strategy as reflected in this slide. Thank you.
Thank you, Edgar. Good afternoon, members. Thank you to the chairperson and chairpersons of committees as well. The slide 18 shows the financing and the debt management strategy. You would recall when we came in June, we were painting quite a very difficult picture for this year with borrowing requirements over 700 billion rand. They still are slightly improved to 774 as a result of an improvement in the budget deficit. But overall, when you look over the medium term, with a longer stabilization path as opposed to the 3 years that we presented earlier, the financing for the medium term and beyond increases quite a bit, which is going to continue to put pressure in the market for further funding in relation to financing the budget deficit. Just focusing on this year, funding is progressing well. Some instruments are doing better than others. The one that you might be interested in is funding from the international finance institutions. We have so far raised about $5.5 billion against a target of about $7 billion, and it's still work in progress, and we hope that the $2 billion would be raised by the time of the end of the fiscal year. And overall, Minister raised some of the risks that we're seeing going forward, and some of them around the implications for the debt service cost. With higher debt, the implication is that we'll be paying much more for debt service cost and therefore crowding out other important spend for the government. Key risks going into the medium term would be the consolidation if it does not realize, as well as the growth reforms that have been articulated. Furthermore, realization of contingent liabilities are going to be quite key in relation to the state-owned companies and as far as it impacts on the fiscal framework, and any other further funding would have a loop, feedback loop again in terms of impacting the debt service cost and also further crowding out of required expenses. So I will stop there, Minister. I think it gives a sense of where we are currently and what the outlooks look like and what the risks are that we need to watch out as we move into the outlook period. Thank you. Over to you, Edgar.
Minister, I think we've got a concluding slide. If the presenter can go to slide number 20, and then I'll basically leave it there because this is the this is basically a summary of what we said in this presentation. So, Mr. Chairman, Minister, I think we will stop there. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
I'm done with the presentation, even from the side of the DG and the Minister.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. We are done on our side.
Okay. Honorable members, let's move to item 4, deliberation. Secretariat, you will assist me in identifying members who would like to ask questions for clarity and make comments.
Cheers, Alan. For now, it's Dion George, Dennis Ryder, and Mr. Isif Tutui.
Okay.
Mr. Morolong, Chair, the fourth name.
Morolong. Okay. Okay. Over to you, Dr. George.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation, Minister, DG, and others. Minister, you've been talking for a while about fiscal anchors. Have you relaxed your previous position on managing the deficit? Because if you look at the numbers, there is no more space for borrowing. You're already crowding out basic services. That's my first question. Then, why have you, Minister, bailed out SAA again? Why not sell it or get a private partner? How can you justify spending money on an airline that you must get from basic services that won't be delivered, obviously, to the most vulnerable? You mentioned education and you mentioned policing. How do you justify that? Then the third question, you mentioned freezing salaries in the public sector and elsewhere. Do the unions and other bodies agree? And then finally, under Operation Vulindlela, structural reforms are mentioned. You know, we know that government can't create jobs. Why is there no action to accelerate entrepreneurial activity? Government seems fixated on infrastructure and being in the center of job creation. And that obviously does not work. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Dr. George. Honorable Ryder.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister, and to the team from Treasury. Appreciate it. Minister, I'll be reasonably brief. Mr. Sishi commented on the possible future lockdowns and the impact that may have on the economy and our path going forward. You mentioned last time to this joint committee that you had lost the battle in cabinet. Can you give us any indications of how the battles are going in cabinet these days in terms of, you know, the outlook for future hard lockdowns and the impact that they may have on the economy? We did have the president say that there's not a return to level three imminently planned, but he didn't commit anywhere beyond imminent plans. So if you can just tell us how the battles or how the discussions are going on at a cabinet level. The next question I have, Chair, thank you, just related to the debt trajectory, which showed an easing off of the trajectory in the medium term. Certainly, I presume, as Dr. George pointed out, because we're just not going to be allowed to borrow anymore. But that indicates that the developmental state agenda is going to have to take a little bit of the back seat. And as I mentioned the other day in my response to the President's speech, that we're moving from developmental state to survival state. However, it's quite concerning to me when I sit in other committee meetings where ministers are telling us that they are not going to abandon their developmental agendas and will continue spending, which is going to cause further pressure on the budget deficit. So can you just tell us, Minister, in terms of the zero-based budgeting, has zero-based budgeting been abandoned? Has the message gone out to your colleagues in cabinet that we need to relook at our projects and need to focus on survival? The last question really relates around DORA and just around spending, where people are feeling it and needing it the most at the moment. I note that there's not a major amendment to the bottom line figure. Are there a lot of violence or movements between budget line items still addressing the COVID-19 response, or are we moving towards business back as usual? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Raida. Honourable Dutoni.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Minister, thank you for the presentation. I'm not going to elaborate on SAA. I do, however, have a concern with regards to the funds that's been taken away from education, and the President has indicated that 200,000 educational positions will be created in the educational sector. My question is, how will this be funded, Minister? And then you mentioned that any slipping will be detrimental to the economy. Minister, could you please give us information? Would you agree that pursuing expropriation without compensation could contribute to the slipping? And would you agree that the escalating service delivery protests in the country and the political infighting in municipalities could also contribute to the slipping in the economy? And lastly, what steps are taken to ensure that economies on local level is being stimulated for growth, and that could result in widening the tax base? Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister.
Thanks, good toy. Sate Mrolo.
No, I just want to say good afternoon to Minister, good afternoon to honourable members. I only have three questions to ask. Let me apologize for not putting on my video. I'm struggling with connectivity. The first question is, can the Minister provide details on where the proposed tax increases will come from? Which taxation line items are we looking at? To the MTBPS made mention of adjustments to senior public service remuneration in order to bring down the cost of the public sector wage bill. Can the Minister elaborate on how such a process would be undertaken and whether there has been any engagement with DPSA on such a process? The last question, sir, is that to what extent does the Treasury believe that the economic recovery plan presented and announced by the President has been appropriately budgeted for? Thanks.
Honorable Abrams.
Yes, Chair, thank you so much. The National Treasurer is indeed appreciated for walking the tightrope and having been able to come up with a plan anyway. Chair, I also have three questions. Now, there's talk in the presentations here about revenue projections that will improve over the 3-year term. My question is, will that be the case even though there is a threatening COVID-19 recession? Two, Chair, it will be unfair if we do not ask the Minister to please brief us on the crisis that is facing Water Board. I think it is a kind of briefing that is due to all of us as both members here in Parliament and in the NCOP as well as National Assembly and provinces, because the issue of water is hitting the communities very hard. Lastly, Chair, I don't know, I might have missed it, but I hear the Minister talking about a plan to stabilize debt, which was initially 3 years and now 5 years. Can we get to hear that plan?
Noxie, are you still in the platform?
I'm through. I said thank you, Chair. Sorry.
When I went to MCO, you didn't say that. You just.
I did, but it was in English. I said it in English, Chair. I understand from Limpopo it's difficult.
Yeah, all languages here in Limpopo are flexible. Honorable Mpisi.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to the Minister and the honorable members. Just one question, Chair, that I want maybe to be clarified by the Minister and the DG, is the issue of labor. We know now that NISA out labor is saying that they don't agree with what the Minister has proposed on the public servant salary bill. I think I just want to ask the Minister whether the Minister, together with the Minister of Public Service and Administration, how are they going to handle this matter with the public sector unions in making sure that we do not have an unnecessary strike that will cost the country dearly during this difficult period of the recession. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Minister, thank you very much for you being here today and addressing us. Honourable Minister, yeah, firstly, the situation with the water issues at municipalities, I would like to get more on that as well. In the beginning, when you addressed us today, you said the following, and I quote, any slippage may lead us to become 100% of debt of our GDP. In other words, we do not have any room for any failures anymore. We cannot afford any slippages. But yet we see that we are again bailing out a slipping or a failing SAA. We have bailed out Eskom. We are busy with land bank. There are so many state institutions that are continuously slipping, and yet we are keeping on bailing them out. Would our economy be able to afford any more bailouts? I know that in the past we've said that we are not in a position to do any more bailouts, but yet time and time and again we go on and we do those bailouts. Are we at a point where we as a we as Parliament and as a government must come to a point where we say absolutely no more bailouts? I believe personally that we cannot afford it.
have been covered by Honorable Ryder and Dr. George as well with regards to the other issues, but I would like to get your comments on that as well. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Okam. Okay. Over to you, Minister DG and the officials of Treasury and SAS.
Chairperson, can I just raise a question quickly before you do?
Okay. And, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Thanks. No, firstly, just two quick points. One is, you know, since 2015, as you know, Chairperson, we've been raising with Treasury, with SARS and so on, and your committee continues to do this, have quarterly, I think it's every 6 months meetings with several other committees and other departments around illicit financial flow. Now, never more has there been a case to say that we need that money, and we've raised this matter repeatedly. I think several of our reports on the budget and MTBPS and so on, our annual reports, have repeatedly raised this about the need for greater cooperation, not just among the departments that's beginning to happen and the entities like Hawks and FIC and whatever, but also amongst the ministers concerned. And we recommended that while it's not for us, as you remember, Chairperson, as Parliament subscribe to the President and the Executive, what interministerial committees they should set up, and they've got too many anyway, but isn't there a case for an interministerial structure with the Minister of Finance at the head, notwithstanding his many other responsibilities, to have such a committee? We've never got a reply from the President. We wrote to him some years ago, nor the minister. They all say yes, and nothing happened. So can the current minister tell us where that process, why they're not doing it, and what they and National Treasury, I see the SARS, I see the commissioners as usual here, are doing about this, you know, and what they're going to do more actively now that we are in the troubles we are, many of which have got nothing to do with us, the global pandemic. Secondly, it's just an observation about us, including me, all of us from the chair and the MPs. So here we are with the biggest crisis over 100 years. It's correct what we are doing, Comrade Chair. We're asking questions and seeking clarity. But underlying our questions, including my own, which is a boring old question, though relevant as it is now, perhaps even not perhaps, in fact, more than ever, it's still an old question. So what is it that we as Parliament, we need to think about this here, but not a question that should be answered now, but in processing the MTBPS, it's something huge here, myself as a chair on the NCOP side and two other relevant chairs should be looking at, which is, you know, we keep asking the same sort of question. You know, why are you bailing out SAA? And the minister will say, I'm not bailing them out, blah, blah, blah. You know, the same issues, as that example, repeatedly are raised today. But we need to move forward, Comrade Chair. It's not just for the minister and for government to decide the way forward out of the mess we're in. It's for us as Parliament also to think of alternatives where we disagree with the minister and the National Treasury and the government. It's also for us to offer alternatives to them. It's also for us to be realistic about where we are. We're in a new terrain, difficult, turbulent, unpredictable as it is, but we need to be more creative and imaginative and more effective and more decisive. Instead of always copying and criticizing the executive, not just the minister, the department and the executive are not vulnerable to such criticism. In short, I'm saying, Chairperson, could we in our report this time be more decisive on what it is we think should be done and monitor what we expect the government to do more actively and assiduously? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Karim. Yeah, for now, those are the questions and comments. Over to you, Minister, and your team.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee. The number of members who have asked questions around these South African Airways. And whether this is a bailout that we've provided for or not. My answer to the query is that this is not a bailout. And I've asked somebody to send me the breakdown of what the issues are that lead us to the 10.5 billion for SAA. And as soon as I get that, I'll come back to it. But I would like to insist that this is not a bailout. The a bailout would have made a huge injection into SAA, which is not in our budget. What's in our budget now are allocations for specific requirements of the business rescue practitioners. And when they're done with their bid, if they decide on the formation of a new airline, they will do that to the extent that that new airline is going to have private enterprise participation, union investment funds, other institutional investments, and so on. It's fine. My understanding, as it is that that new airline that is being thought about will have private investors, probably along the telecom line, structurally, in terms of the issued capital, subscription agreements, independent boards of directors, independent management, and so on, et cetera. That's my understanding, and I might be wrong, but that's my understanding of the situation. So I think we should separate between the business rescue practitioners and the establishment of the new airline. So I think that's what's in my head. And whether we need the new airline or not, really, that's not my lane. And I've been told many times to stay in my lane. So that's not my lane. If you want to discuss the new airline, whatever it is, you'll have to discuss that with Minister Gordhan, because that's not my lane, really. The next big issue that members have raised has to do with the public service wage bill. Let me indicate that we need to approach this matter strategically. As I indicated yesterday in my budget submission, we said that approach the matter strategically. Most of our public civil servants are hardworking people, and they too don't want to burden the country, but that they must not carry the sacrifices alone. All of us must come into the picture, private enterprise, public representatives, the executive, both national, provincial, and local. All of us must take sacrifices in this situation, because we cannot continue as if the situation is the same as was the case before the fiscal crisis that we find ourselves in. So, and I didn't hear members of parliament applauding yesterday when I made the proposal that we should all sacrifice. They were quiet, and yet they should have been the one clapping, saying that at least they're prepared to make a sacrifice, but they didn't seem to want to do that. The last point to make on this is that, sure, we should try and avoid a public servant strike at all costs. We must try and avoid that. But whatever we do, we cannot break the fiscal framework. That we can't do at all. Because otherwise we're on the road to, on a slippery road, and we're all going to regret it, because there will be nothing for us. Look at what happened in Greece. Look at what happened in Argentina, in Ecuador, and so on. There's an African country as well, which basically is on the verge of default, whose name I'm not allowed to mention, case I get into trouble again. But that's the we don't want to be in that situation. And therefore, there are very important strategic conversations which are taking place between the Department of Public Service and Administration and the trade union movement in the public sector. And Minister Mgunu is leading that process. Again, for further details on this, I kick for touch so that I can stay in my lane. That is his lane, and he's going to deal with those issues. Is the economic recovery, the economic reconstruction and recovery program catered to for in this medium-term budget statement? Yes, to a large extent, part of it which have to do with the public sector, with the budgeting process. Yes, I covered that, whether it's public employment activities, whether it's unlocking business opportunities in terms of making the ease of business, and so on. All those things which have been tabulated are there. The economic reconstruction and recovery program is not purely a government-funded program. It is a program to unlock private enterprise as well, to unlock government investment in infrastructure, but also even the infrastructure investment is not just a government infrastructure investment only. It is meant to pull together private enterprise to come into the picture, cooperatives and so on, into a common national consensus that will move the country forward. At the end of the day, we're expecting private enterprise to invest as much as possible, create jobs, and be able to move forward. And it is in that context that the structural reforms which we've been talking about are not just government structural reforms. These are structural reforms in our economy as a whole. And private enterprise is very key to that process of structural reforms. But there are some elements which are large elements concerning government. For example, what is the role of Portnet in unlocking the flow of goods? You know, is the tariff level that is being charged by Portnet a correct one to unlock economic development? If not, what structural change should happen in the tariff system at Portnet to make sure that there's flow of goods, that there's no excessive pricing of goods and so on? Very important part of the structural reforms. Another component, of course, of structural economic reforms would be, how do we expand the large ports and harbors in South Africa, the Durban Harbor, for example, the East London Harbor, the Kuha, and so on, such that they can handle larger volumes as trade begins to open, in particular with the African Continental Free Trade Area, because there will be lots of movements of goods and so on. So we need to get that structural change, the extension of the Durban Harbor, inviting private enterprise as well to be part of the management of this port. So you'll find that in our conversations with the banking association, for example, we'd want to encourage them to be more responsive to private enterprise when they come to them for the loan guarantee scheme, for example, so that we can have a proper serious business restart. Older businesses, but also new businesses, with the funding mechanisms being within the 200 billion loan guarantee scheme. So I'm going to this extreme length to explain that the economic reconstruction and recovery program is not just a government-funded program, but in the main is to unlock opportunities and so on. And one of the sectors, of course, that we're hopeful will make a significant contribution to the recovery process, it was tourism. And with Germany now seeing a resurgence, France seeing a resurgence of the COVID-19, you know, it's just going to cause a problem for our tourism industry. And God forbid, there should be no second wave in South Africa, because if there is, that tourism thing is dead, and the economic reconstruction and recovery program is going to be found wanting, because most of the things and items there will be negatively affected. Chair, can you hear me? Something wrong here?
I can hear you, but there's a strange sound on the background. I don't know where it's coming
from. Strange sound, yeah. Maybe the technicians can look into that.
Secretariat, this sound, where does it come from?
It comes from the Minister's side, Chair.
It's okay.
Huh? Oh, for me?
Budget in the
regards to Chair Chairperson from my side.
And I'm not the budget.
And I've been muted. I don't know what's happening. But anyway, it's not from my side, Chair.
IT, can you assist in muting this strange sound?
Bajima communicating something.
She doesn't want me to stay here today. Anyway, the point I was making though. Oh no. Anyway,
Alan, good luck. Where are IT people? Okay.
I'm talking to them on the phone.
Okay. No, proceed on, Minister. You're not going to say it means something.
No, it's not. Okay, I'll just proceed. The point I was making is that we need to see the relationships between government